last night. Whether you were sitting in the theater, at the Charles Theater, sitting in the comfort of your home, or in the audience watching. Last night's debate was probably the best of the three in terms of the sparks that flew, the intensity of the debate. What did we really learn or not learn? I don't know. What did it say about who should be the next and best leader of the United States of America? Did we learn something about that? We're going to hear some clips from that tape, from that debate, and talk to two men who are intimately involved with this campaign in the state of Maryland. Joining me in studio is Dr. Jim Palura, who is chairman of the Maryland State Republican Party. Jim, good to meet you. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Mike. Thank you.
And Quincy Gamble, who is executive director of the Maryland State Democratic Party, is on his way. We heard he's about to park his car and join us upstairs, and he'll be here in just a minute, caught in the rush of traffic this time of day. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts on this, on the debate and what happened. And I want to play a clip until Quincy gets here so we can talk about some of the issues that did arise. But let me ask you your sense of that debate last night. I mean, and if I know it's hard to look through it and not a partisan lens when you're a partisan in this election, but
you know, overall, I think it's just.
You're on, Jim. Jim Palura.
The format of those debates leaves a lot to be desired. I thought of all of the debates so far, the Saddleback debate, way back when, was probably the best one because you really got a feel for what the candidate, how they felt. At this past debate, I thought was of the three official debates, was probably the best one. Both candidates looked very relaxed. And we were able to cut through a lot of the rhetoric of campaign and get a feel for exactly the philosophy of either one of both of those candidates.
I wonder what you think what you think the American people thought of those debates. I mean, there's a lot of talk, and when Quincy gets here, we'll talk a bit about both candidates, but there's a lot of talk about people looking at those debates and seeing John McCain start this debate out pretty strong in the beginning of the debate, some people would analyze, but many people analyzed the debate saying ended up being, if not shaky, then very angry, not very calm, seemed to lose his cool, so to speak.
Who, John McCain?
Yeah.
I disagree with that statement. But as far as the average person, I think most people have made up their mind by now. And I have a pretty good feel of what average Americans and especially average Marylanders feel. I get a lot of those come into my veterinary clinic. And for the most part, most of my clients, a lot of people that I talked to, felt that it was the best of the three, and they've really got an insight into both of those candidates.
When you chair a party, state Republican Party, in a state that, according to all the polls and look at the congressional quarterly polls of every state in the country and the races that are taking place, Maryland has the third highest percentage in polls of voters supporting Barack Obama after Hawaii and Washington, D.C. And you're out there slugging away. Talk a bit about that, just from a personal level and political level.
It depends on whether or not you believe the philosophy or not. And I truly believe in the Republican philosophy of small government, allowing people to keep more of their own money, more efficient government, those kind of things. And I think that a lot of Marylanders – now you got to be careful. You don't want to look just at the numbers. And if you look at the numbers of registered Democrats versus the numbers of registered Republicans, of course, we're at a tremendous minority. But think back to 2002. Bob Ehrlich ran on a pretty conservative message, and he won. So there is a feeling of conservatism that runs through a lot of Marylanders, and I think if it's tapped and – Martin O'Malley's doing a lot to tap that right now because of what he's doing to average Marylanders. I think that the Republican Party in Maryland will thrive and grow.
There's a campaign, and I'm trying to hold off on getting to the heart of this debate until Quincy gets here. If I can, if not, you know, I'll just get into it, and when Quincy gets here, he gets here. There's one race in the state of Maryland that is a contest, it seems. And that's a race that Wayne Gilchrist lost the Republican primary in the first district. Eastern Shore and parts of Harford County and parts of Baltimore County.
Parts of Anne Arundel County.
Parts of Anne Arundel County as well. It's very strange. We have very strange districts
very strange
in the state. So the Attorney General, the State's Attorney Cradiville, against Senator Harris. I've seen mixed polls about that. And your thoughts about that race? I mean, it's a very, if there's a tight race in Maryland, that's the tight race.
That's a very tight race. And from everything I gather, it looks like I believe Andy Harris is going to pull that out and is going to be the end up being the winner in that district. Although the Democratic Congressional Committee is not – they're pouring a lot of money into that.
A lot of money into that campaign.
A lot of money into that campaign. They would love nothing better than to reduce Maryland down to one Republican congressman. And this looks like something they may be able to do. And so they're going after it. I think they're – wasting their money. And I think in the end, from what I gather about people on the Eastern Shore and in that congressional district, Andy Harris is going to be victorious over there.
Folks, we're going to jump in here into this, what happened last night. So join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. As we look at last night's debate, who do you think won the debate? What do you think were the most important parts of that debate last night? What are your thoughts on this election? Who you're voting for and why? We sit in between two states, Pennsylvania and Virginia, that are two of the most hotly contested races in the nation that could be very pivotal to who wins this election. There have been many people, especially on the Democratic side, who have been traveling to those states to register voters and to bring people out to vote. So your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Who you'd like to see win? What do you think happened? And who do you think won last night's debate? If you can have a winner or a loser in those debates. There were things that happened in that debate last night when Senator McCain brought up Bill Ayers and when he – that one piece when he brought up Bill Ayers. It seemed to me that that if there's anything that is almost kind of – for a lot of people in the media, a lot of people looking at this after a while as a non-issue, it's that one. Do you think it's a non-issue?
No, no way.
Why do you think it's not a non-issue?
In fact, if you say most of the people in the media look at it a non-issue, because it's pretty obvious that most of the people in the media are on the side of Barack Obama. So they tend
depends on which network. If you look at MSNBC,
if
you look at Fox,
if you look at NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, it's pretty obvious. Here's the thing with Bill Ayers. As with everyone, we associate ourselves and then we continue that association because we are like-minded. And you have to look, and I think it's very important to look at the candidates. And I'm just not going to say Barack Obama, could be any candidate. You look at their associations during their formative adult years, and that says a lot about what that person is about. So you cannot dismiss the influence that Bill Ayers had on Barack Obama. You cannot dismiss the influence that Acorn had on Barack Obama. You cannot dismiss the influence that the Democrat machine in Chicago had on Barack Obama. That's what made him. That's him. That's his political being. Just like John McCain's political being comes out of the Navy, out of being a prisoner of war camp.
Keating Five
is an example. John McCain was exonerated in the Keating Five.
Well,
let's keep
sort of
everything.
But I mean, let's go to the phones here. But since Quincy's not here, I'm just going to play this role for
That's
a minute.
Fine.
The Bill Ayers situation? I mean, most people who follow that, and I follow it pretty intensely, is that he knew Bill Ayers very occasionally. He was one of many people who gave him a fundraiser in his house when he ran for the state senate. One of many, 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 many people who lived in his neighborhood, three blocks away. He served on a board with him. He ran into him once over the last several years. You know, I mean, it's like maybe as much as it would be like if you and I knew each other around the corner, and this is the first time you and I had seen each other in 3 years.
Well, and listen, I don't want to get sidelined on Bill Ayers, but now let's read Barack Obama's book and how he describes his relationship with Bill Ayers and Acorn. It's different than what he's saying now.
Let me introduce Quincy Gamble to us. He's finally here. Good to have you, Quincy.
Hey, Mark.
Welcome.
How you doing?
Quincy Gamble is executive director.
Hi, Quincy. How you doing?
Doing well.
Of the Maryland State Democratic Party.
Sorry to be late. I was counting voter registrations and it just took forever.
There you go.
That's a good line, Quincy. Good line. So we're going to play some tapes here, but let's get some of our listeners in here. Then I'm going to play a couple of tapes. Right. Unless you want to respond to some of the things you've heard on your way in the door.
Well, we walked in. You're talking about the air situation.
Right.
That has seemingly become the centerpiece of the McCain-Palin campaign the last couple of weeks. And I think Senator Obama was clear last night when he said, let's talk about issues that's really affecting the American people.
Well, that's not become the centerpiece of the campaign. That's become the centerpiece of the blogs and the internet and things like that. The campaign is centered around the economy. So let's just leave it.
Well,
go ahead.
We definitely will have to differ on that. And if you want to talk about the economy, obviously Senator Obama has laid before the American people a great plan to get this country back on track. Obviously, the McCain campaign is trying to divorce himself from the last 8 years of futility from the Bush administration. And the American people are seeing straight through it. And the polls bear that out. Folks are looking for a change, and Senator Obama is going to lead this nation back to prominence.
Let us open the phones here. Quincy Gamble is with us, who is executive director of the Maryland State Democratic Party. Dr. Jim Pallora is with us. Jim is chairman of the Maryland State Republican Party.
Correct.
You are with us. Citizens of the state of Maryland at 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, where you are right now, from Northern Virginia, D.C., Prince George's County, Montgomery County, Baltimore, Howard County, wherever you're calling from, join us. And Vanique, in your car, you're on the air.
George's County.
Hi, Vanique, you're on.
Oh, hello. This is Bernice Mueller Travis. I live in Bowie, Maryland, and I'm a very fervent Barack Obama supporter. And I just I thought that Senator Obama gave a very steady, even presentation last night of his issues. I was particularly uplifted by the depths at which he went into the conversation about abortion and abortion rights and Roe versus Wade and why it is so important. I was stunned, absolutely stunned, to hear John McCain say that the issue of a woman's health being protected as a measure that needs to be factored in whenever you're looking at abortion rights, that was a ruse, and a ruse that women often use, or political parties and those who are pro-choice use, to get out of being in compliance with later-term abortion restrictions. It was absolutely stunning. It is the first time I have ever heard a Republican, as someone who's anti-choice, go that far. I think it should be a clarion call to women. And for as a woman of color, the issue of integrity over the choices that I make with my own body is historically rooted, and here in the state of Maryland has deep, deep, deep roots. And it's something that if there was no other issue that I cared about, and I care about many, abortion being just one of them, abortion rights mm-hmm. being just one of them, that really would have set me completely off if I wasn't already opposed to John McCain. But it was stunning. I thought Senator Obama gave the most thoughtful, in the 25 years that I have been paying attention to this issue, it was the most thoughtful, careful, balanced approach that I have ever heard to that issue. And it is true. Nobody supports abortion rights. Nobody wants people to go out and have abortions. But the balance of that is exactly what Senator Obama said. We have to make it possible for people to get information and for young people to have access to information that would lead them away from that choice and away from unwanted pregnancies. And that's something that we fight with the Republicans and conservatives and evangelicals about all the time.
Well, let me let Jim respond, since you were talking about Senator McCain's position on this, as well as the Senator Obama's. Jim?
Okay, with all due respect, you have it a little bit wrong as your interpretation of what was said. When John McCain was talking about women's health of the mother, the health of the mother being a ruse, he was referring to Barack Obama's explanation why he voted against that bill in the House, in the Senate, in the Illinois Senate, about providing care for a botched abortion if the baby's still alive. Barack Obama claimed that he voted against that because it didn't take into account the health of the mother. And that's not true. I mean, he voted against that bill knowing that the health of the mother, well-being of the mother, was already covered by other bills at the time.
Quincy Gamble?
Well, Well, you know, Barack Obama has a stellar record as it relates to reproductive rights and a myriad of issues. I think what came across last night on the screen when you saw John McCain just on just about every other issue that was talked about, he just looked very angry, very defensive. And I watched a bit of the commentary last night, and there were a lot of folks very appalled with his health of the women, in quotation marks, move. But, you know, as it goes, I mean, the record speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama, John McCain, starkly different on a myriad of issues, and this is only one of them. So,
410-319-8888. Randy in Baltimore, you're on the air.
John McCain, starkly different.
Randy, you there?
This is only one of them. 410-319-8888.
Randy in Baltimore. Randy? You want to turn down your radio and join us?
Go ahead. Randy,
you there? Yeah, I can hear you. I want to talk about the debate last night.
Randy?
Randy, could you turn your debate down? Turn your radio down, please.
Yeah. I want to talk about the debate last night. Can you hear me now?
You can. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. The debate last night was great. I believe McCain did his best, but Obama won after all. He's the winner. He was the winner. As usual, he addresses all the issues, political issues and economical issues.
Randy, thanks so much. Let's go to Kevin on his cell. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Well, well.
Doing well. First of all, let me say two things. For the brothers from the Republic, you know, I'm a 20-year veteran. Why do we keep selling America this bull? We've been selling the South bull forever. If you're a Republican and you be like us, we got your back. Let me tell you something. Bill Clinton said something a long time ago before he started acting crazy. Is when he said in Baltimore, he said, "If my white poor brothers know they have more in common with my poor blacks, we can get it together." And he said that to say that the conservatives stole all this money. I sit back and watch from 2000 all the way to now how much money. They don't even care whether they went to the House or the Congress or the Senate because they just stole all the money from the people. We just now took $700 billion, sent it to Iraq. We just now had a fake 9/11 with Wall Street so they can get some more money because they knew they couldn't go back to the Congress and the Senate and get some more. Let me tell you something. Here's how I go down in the spirit of God. If you turn around and take our anointed position, which the anointed position is the presidency of the United States because you're taking care of the world, and you don't turn around and you steal it like Bush did in 2000, 2004, he shows you all the hell that goes with it. And that's all that's been going on with America right now is a bunch of hell. And the only way they can put this back together, God forgive me, it's not black Obama, just Obama, the man. The world is acting for him. America is acting for him. And we're going to sit back and watch how you try to steal this one away for the Republican guy.
Kevin, thanks so much. I want to play a clip here, but let me just talk a piece of what Kevin said. Part of the debate going on in America now is this question of voter fraud, voter registration, right. and there's always been this debate in America, especially since the year 2000 in Florida, right. And it hasn't stopped. Both your perspectives on where this is. Quincy?
Well, I think it's a real paranoia out there for folks who have witnessed the election and especially of 2000, how it went down, that, you know, there's something other than what happens in the polling booth determines the outcome of elections. I'll know this. I can speak to Maryland, and I know Governor O'Malley's leadership and state government is doing everything that he can in this state to make sure that we have a fair election. Polls are accessible. There's been tremendous upgrades by the State Board of Elections. And I imagine that's going on all over the country because one thing you do see with the increased number of voter registrations around the country, it's going to be a lot of pressure on these systems to hold up. I just have a lot of faith in these systems that they will work properly and function properly. I know here in Maryland we have a lot of confidence in the plan that Governor O'Malley and the State Board of Election have laid out for this election. I imagine that's going on all over the country. We're going to get a real winner in this election.
I think I have a gut feeling that may happen too, Jim.
Well, I don't think that there's a real concern in Maryland, to be honest with you. I do have a concern with ballot one that's going to be on the ballot in November.
Right. Ballot
but,
one?
But
early
question
voting.
One.
Oh, question
early
one.
Voting.
But,
right.
Quincy, for you to sit there and say there's no problem across the country, there are 15 states right now that are being investigated, Acorn's being investigated. Ohio alone, the district court ordered the Secretary of State in Ohio to look through 200,000 registrants.
Right.
That's not the Republicans. That's not the Democrats. That's the court. There's obviously something's wrong there. And that's what has to be checked out. And now to go back to 2000 and start the old argument that Bush stole it and all that stuff, I don't even want to go there because it's too ridiculous to go there. If you look at the actual
There are a couple thousand people in Florida that don't think
it's
ridiculous.
If you look at the legal ramifications of what Al Gore did back then, you will see that everything was done the way it should have been. But that's done.
Wow.
That's in the past. George Bush is not running. John McCain is running.
Quincy,
and we have a group like Acorn that is out there. It's being investigated in 15 states and severely investigated, scrutinized in Ohio. That's nothing to laugh at.
Well, it's going to be adjudicated, it's going to be investigated, and we'll figure out what happens. But, you know, if we want to talk about the past, we can just talk about 2006 here in Maryland and some of the insane practices that were taking
2006
place.
2006 is gone. Bob Ehrlich is gone.
Thank you.
That's Bob Ehrlich's gone.
Thank you, Governor O'Malley, for that. But in Maryland, we're going to have a great election this year. We have a lot of confidence in the system that's been put together, and it's going to be fine.
I think Maryland 2008 is fine.
Yeah, we have a lot of people calling. Well, let me play this. Get your comment on one piece that really struck me last night. A number of things struck me. One of the things, this is moderator Bob Schieffer asking a question of both candidates.
We found out yesterday that this year's deficit will reach an astounding record high, $455 billion. Some experts say it could go to $1 trillion next year. Both of you have said you want to reduce the deficit, but the nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget ran the numbers on both of your proposals, and they say the cost of your proposals, even with the savings you claim can be made each, will add more than $200 billion to the deficit. Aren't you both ignoring reality? Won't some of the programs you're proposing have to be trimmed, postponed, even eliminated? Give us some specifics on what you're going to cut back, Senator Obama.
Neither one of you are running for office here, but let me ask you this question. The one question he had, I thought Bob Schieffer, by the way, was the best host of any of the four debates
right.
So far in my book. Mm-hmm. But neither Senator Obama nor Senator McCain answered that question. And that's one of the toughest questions tonight. If you look at the independent policy analysts, they say there are a couple of them maybe off by a few billion dollars here each, but said Obama's tax plan would boost the debt by $3.5 trillion. McCain's proposals will boost the debt by $5 trillion mm-hmm. on top of the $2 trillion they think may happen anyway, but the Congressional Budget Office. Okay. So neither one of the candidates tackled this question honestly when it came to what they're saying we can do to deal with the crisis faced by the bank and the finance industry in America and to address the question of debt, how we affect these taxes. I mean, and just that. Right. I mean, why do you think it's so difficult for either one of the candidates to answer this question honestly?
There's going to be some tough choices that are going to have to be made when Barack Obama is president of the United States. Now, one thing we have confidence in is that his priorities are the priorities of the American people. It goes without saying that there are going to be tough choices that are going to have to be made. I trust that his priorities are going to be the priorities that are those of the American people. The number one thing, we're going to save a lot of money when we end this war in Iraq, bring our soldiers home. Have a responsible defense budget, and then we'll start from there, obviously. And I'm not speaking for the campaign, but I have a lot of confidence that he'll start from there and see when we can fulfill a lot of these promises that we're making. But his priorities are those of the American people. That's why the American people are responding to his candidacy. That's why polls are bearing that out. The momentum is all on the Democratic side. We'll be fine.
Let me see if I can answer the question. You know, I don't think either one of them wanted to purposely avoid the question. I don't think they tried to give – I don't see how you can answer a question like that. Here we are in October of 2008. The election hasn't occurred yet. The world could change drastically in a few months. So to sit there and say, I'm going to cut this program – nobody can do that because you don't know what the world's going to be like in January of 2009. However, I think if you listen, now you got two different people here. You have Barack Obama, who is a very articulate man. He's an intelligent man. He's lawyer trained. So he's trained to be careful and to say what he thinks wants to be heard versus what he really wants to say. And he's a street smart Chicagoan. On the other hand, you have a disciplined Navy guy that's spent time in a POW camp. They're two different personalities. Listen to what they said. John McCain said he's going to freeze spending. And John McCain is so different from George Bush, but just no one wants to sit and listen to him. George Bush cut taxes. Great. That's what we want. That's what Republicans want. But George Bush also spent too much. That's not what Republicans want. John McCain wants to put a spending freeze on, and he understands that you need to keep more money in the hands of the people and yet spend less from a government point of view.
Can I jump in there one quick second? I mean, we talked about discipline in last night's performance, and I think you can talk about discipline as a campaign. Barack Obama's campaign has been extremely disciplined, and he's been ran a marvelous campaign.
I didn't say anything against Barack Obama. I'm just explaining he's a different type of person.
You articulated than
John McCain.
That's obvious.
Yeah.
And I think it's obvious in the campaign they're running. But based on the ebb and flow of this campaign, Barack Obama has been consistent through a very rigorous primary. And now going into the general, he stayed on message. He's run a very disciplined, very even-keel campaign. You know, John McCain last night, you know, being the hero that he is, no one can dispute that. You know, last night's performance, if you heard it on radio, you'd have a different experience than if you watched it on TV. You know, he looked like he was in agony last night.
That's all I'm saying is they're different people. Don't look at them. Listen to him. See what he has to say.
Let's see what the people have to say about that. We'll go to another clip here as we talk with our two guests today. And our two guests represent both parties in the state of Maryland. Jim Pelora is the chairman of the state Republican Party. Quincy Gamble is the executive director of the state Democratic Party. 410-319-8888. And Kimberly, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Kimberly.
How you doing?
Well, thank you.
I'm listening to, first of all, I wanted to say I listened to you guys, and I'm glad that I was able to get through today. Thank you very much. The things that the other gentleman is saying, and I apologize that I don't know your name, you are correct. There are two very different styles in these two candidates. And the two different styles basically are very apparent in the things that they say. So you're saying, listen to what they say, and I am, and I guess this is just about how people think things should be handled. One of the things that he spoke about last night was education, and in D.C. that they have going on right now?
Charter schools.
Vouchers.
Vouchers. Right. And, I mean, it is an excellent program, but then you're leaving out a lot of other students that would that would benefit from that program just because you only have a certain amount of vouchers to get out. So then the other question would be, well, then how do you get the masses? And then I'm hearing Obama talk about the masses. I'm hearing McCain pinpoint certain people, certain people qualifying for certain things. I mean, it's a lot of people in this country that need help, and we got to try to do some things that's going to help everybody. And from what I can hear, Obama is saying those things. Now, if you're saying he's saying that just that because that's what, you know, people want to hear, well, he's doing a good job because it's what I want to hear and it's what's going to make me vote for him.
Well, we have to take a very short break here. We're going to come right back. And we take come back, let's talk about the different education philosophies of the two candidates here. They're really very starkly very different. Put those on the table. 410-319-8888. We'll also take a look at Joe the Plumber. Let's see who he really is. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Stein. And before we jump back into this debate about the debate, let me remind you that WEAA is in need of volunteers for our upcoming fall membership drive that begins October the 18th. Through October the 26th, if you have an hour or two to volunteer for this show or any other program on WEA, come join the party, help your public radio station, call Norvell Jackson in our membership department at 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075. Enjoy yourself, have fun, and be part of your public radio here at WEAA. But let me reintroduce our guest, Dr. Jim Pelora, who's chairman of the Maryland Republican Party, and Quincy Gamble, executive director of the state Democratic Party. Before we go back to the phones, folks, hold on. We're going to come to your phone calls in just a minute. Those of you on the highway will go to first. You don't veer off that highway. But we left off with education. Mm-hmm. Very different views of education. Let me throw this out. And Quincy, I'll go to you, and then I'll go over to Jim.
All right.
I listened to that part of the debate very carefully, and although a whole bit carefully. But you can say this is unfair, Jim. I just want to throw that. It seemed like at last night's debate that Obama laid out a pretty large plan about clear plan. It's going to cost money. You're going to have to invest in education. It was a pretty thorough kind of description of education. John McCain was focused on vouchers. Maybe it's unfair or fair. Let's talk about the difference between the two approaches. You want to start, Quincy, then we'll go over to Jim.
I just think overall, you know, I think Senator Obama's plan was more in-depth, and as he articulated, I mean, just like everything else that the senator talks about, it was a plan that really talked about how we can have the greatest effect on as many kids as possible. Obviously, you heard some of the critiques of No Child Left Behind. You know, I think his line was some of the funding was left behind. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it needs to be revisited, if not scrapped and start from the beginning. But, you know, sort of his core message is making sure we get quality teachers in these places, we pay them accordingly, and we just offer as much choice as we can to students to you know, have quality education. And I think he articulated it fine last night. Senator McCain's view seemed to be very narrow, obviously more divisive, whether we're talking about vouchers or charter schools or whatever the like is. But, you know, Senator Obama is committed to more opportunity to more people rather than fewer. And I think it came across in his delivery last night.
Jim?
Well, I'm not sure what Senator Obama's plan is. He said all the right words. We want to pay teachers more. We want quality teachers. We want to educate kids. Our society is no good unless we have educated citizens. I mean, they're all the right things, and Republicans have no problem with it, and we believe that too.
We're going to get your
what
vote,
we
doctor.
Have to understand, and Baltimore City is a good example. We pay $16,000 per student in Baltimore City.
It's 15, not that high, but anyway.
It's yeah. 15 it's to 16,000
really dollars
per
I know,
student.
I know our schools. Is
and
not that
yet,
high.
There's an awful lot of kids that aren't doing too well in Baltimore City schools.
Making real
and
progress.
And there's an awful lot of parents that would love nothing better than a voucher to have their kids out of a failing school and into a functioning school. This all comes down to personal choice. And I think if you look at every city where a voucher program is tried, it's very successful. Washington, D.C. is a good example. The other thing is getting rid of bad teachers and rewarding successful and good teachers.
Isn't the hardest debate, though, between, to be fair, between Barack Obama and Senator McCain, between the majority of Democrats and majority of Republicans, it's a debate over the future of public education, whether or not we should have a public support education system and not. I mean, that really is ultimately what we're talking about here,
Absolutely.
Whether or not you put money into a public education system as a way of teaching America's kids or whether you don't and have vouchers and another system entirely. I mean, we're really talking about the heart of what kind of education system.
Oh, no, I disagree. I don't think that the Republicans are arguing the point that we should scrap the public education system. What Republicans argue is that we see American students dropping in their ranking in the world, and yet we keep funding and throwing money at this, quote, public education system. All we're seeing is let's look at some other options and some complementary programs to the public education system. It's gotten so bad now in the public education system that they don't have time to teach because of all other programs. Something has to be changed to improve the level of education that our children get.
Quincy, let me go back to the phones here.
Do you think that No Child Left Behind has been successful or has exacerbated problems?
No, I don't.
I think we agree on something.
I think that
the Republican-led No Child Left Behind program has not been successful.
Well, listen, I'm not a Republican hack. I'm not going to sit up here and say that everything Republicans do is right or wrong. I'm just giving you what the basic Republican philosophy is. And in something like No Child Left Behind, there's a lot of Republicans who were not happy with that program and felt that local control of schools should be paramount.
Let me return the phones at 410-319-8888 and go back to some clips from last night's debate as we look at last night's debate with our two guests representing the State Republican Party and the State Democratic Party, Jim Pelora and Quincy Gamble. 410-319-8888. Tom, you're on there.
Well, hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Tom.
I'm just traveling through. I'm on my way to Florida and listening into the discourse. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. You're
welcome. One of the things I'd like to correct Mr. Pallora on, Bill Ayers was not a fundraiser for Barack Obama. The meeting at his house was merely a meet the candidate coffee, and that is all, that has been verified. But one of the things that I find that Republicans aren't talking about, and basically they're giving Governor Palin a pass, is on her unwed the daughter having a child out of wedlock. Let's just suppose that had been Chelsea Clinton. Don't you think the fundamentalist Christians would have been up in arms about moral turpitude, et cetera, et cetera? Yet everyone seems to be giving her a pass on this.
Well, two things. I mean, whether or not it would have exploded on before, I think that.
I'm not even going to comment on that.
That families.
That's because of a hypothetical, whether it was Chelsea Clinton. That's a ridiculous statement. This was a family event. This young lady that became pregnant out of wedlock, she's marrying the husband. This is a family deal. And let me tell you, there are thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of families across this country to go through something like that every day. And I don't think we even should be discussing
that. We don't discuss. I think family issues should be off the table in any election in anybody's family. 410-319-8888. And Reverend Daki, you're on the air. Daki, you there?
Hey, Brother Mark, how you doing?
Good, Daki. Good to hear you. Go ahead.
God bless you for your critical thinking, man, and for this show. One thing I wanted to say was this. Is that it seems that every election they got these flag words. And if it ain't liberal, then it's affirmative action or abortion or entitlements or the war or terrorism and the like. And there are a lot of code words that are still being used. The thing that concerns me is that when we talk about the election and we talk about safeguarding the election, we assume that the Constitution is a safeguard and the Supreme Court is one, a catch-all. And it seems to me that when people point to Florida, it's not in the past. Because an election was stolen, it was on a track to go to the Supreme Court, go through the state process. It was leapfrogged to the Supreme Court, where those appointees, Clarence Thomas and all of them, sided with Bush. And I say that to say that as we talk about this election and all those other cold words, like charter schools, if there's a constitution, I'm almost finished, and we talk about equal protection under law and due process and all those variables, then education should be available for everybody, poor, whites, blacks, everybody, and the like. The last thing is this, that I'm a Vietnam veteran. I didn't pick up a gun by choice in Vietnam. And so for the gentleman to suggest that Barack Obama is just a street smart lawyer and Senator McCain is a war hero, who ain't? There shouldn't have been a Vietnam War, and there shouldn't be a war in Iraq, and they bank robbed the federal surplus that was there and Social Security and everything to pay for a war that shouldn't have happened. So as we deal with these cold words, I hope, as we deal with the character of Acorn and the character of Obama and the character of McCain, that we really get down to the fact that our children's futures are being sabotaged, you know, by the fact that folks are spinning and spinning and spinning because they think they can initiate wars that have a high cost for public lives, you know. So I hope that gets addressed in the mix. And then last, I hope that the whole campaign momentum that these have, it's too quiet out here, whether it's Obama or anybody else. There are not enough bumper stickers, not enough sound, not enough public drama out here, and I hope that gets out there based upon radio programs like this. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much. I guess that there are certain kind of code words we go through back and forth. I was going to ask you this, Jim, when we talk about Obama being street smart, what does that mean? No. Obama is not a kid from the streets. He grew up in Hawaii and Kansas and California, and he was a community organizer. But what does that mean, he's street smart?
I just meant as his adult life was in Chicago politics. And that's just who he is. That's not a derogatory
term. But you don't think that John McCain's as rough and tumble as his politics, as Chicago, Arizona's a pretty rough place in politics?
I'm not saying rough and tumble. I'm just saying these are two different people with two different psyches. And to see, it's very difficult to say who won or who lost. And all I'm saying is don't be sidelined by their demeanor. Listen to what they say. Now, I was a Vietnam veteran. And I like the Reverend's comments about we need more discourse out there about this. I want to see more signs. I want to see more bumper stickers as well. I don't want to go back to 2000.
Let me play this piece. This is where John McCain talks about Barack Obama wanting to restrict trade and raise taxes that will lead us from recession to depression. Let's play this clip, and then we're going to go to Teresa in Baltimore, next caller.
I don't think there's any doubt that Senator Obama wants to restrict trade and he wants to raise taxes. And the last president of the United States that tried that was Herbert Hoover. And we went from a deep recession into a depression. We're not going to follow that path while I'm when I'm president of the United States.
All right. Gentlemen, we have very different agendas here about taxes and about what path to follow when it comes to the economic crisis facing America.
I think Senator Obama's plan has been very, very clear, and 95% of all Americans won't receive a tax increase at all. I mean, if you're lucky enough to fit in that 5%, then probably you can afford to pay a little more. But I think Senator Obama's plan has been very, very clear. The vast majority of Americans will see a decrease in their taxes, and we'll fund the things that it takes to make America great again: better education system, more public safety, better health care. And I think it's pretty clear. Dr. Pelura is probably in that 5%, so he doesn't agree with.
Well, actually, I am, but this is part of the problem. 95% of that 95%, 40% of them have no taxable liability. So under Barack Obama's plan, they're going to get a check from the government. That's called welfare. Then the top 5%, actually, the folks, when Barack Obama talks about raising the taxes on two people that make $250,000 a year or not, I don't know if either one of you have ever owned a business or know what it's like to be a sole proprietor or a Chapter S. You are taxed on your gross. That's how your tax rate is set. So I'm a sole proprietor. So even though I don't take home anywhere near $250,000, I'm going to fall into Barack Obama's tax rate.
But it's a small business person's choice whether or not they want to be an S corporation or not.
Well, that's exactly right. Most of Main Street are small businesses like I am. And that's where the jobs are formed. Now, you start punishing success.
But 98% of small businesses don't make $250,000 a year.
But 98%. You don't understand the difference between a sole proprietorship and an S corporation, those kind of things. That's different. You may not bring home $250,000, but you'd be taxed at that rate. Listen, the bottom line is, what made this country great was the old American dream where you work hard, absolutely, you go to school, you work hard, you build a business, and you reap the benefits of that business.
I'm just trying to keep it balanced. Everybody has a chance to talk before we have to go here. Quincy, let me go over here, and then we'll go back to the phones.
No, I just think that the plan is clear. 98% of businesses don't make $250,000. The plan that Barack Obama has laid out for the American people will give us a chance to actually have that American dream that Dr. Pelura was talking about.
Yeah, you hit that $250,000 line, you're going to be punished for building that business and hiring those people and creating those jobs. America does not punish success. That is what made America.
You think taxes are punishment?
When it's unfairly or unequally applied.
4103.
Fundamental difference between Republicans and
exactly.
Democrats.
Exactly. It is. It's a very fundamental difference between Republicans and Democrats.
4103198888. Teresa, you've been holding on. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for having this show, and it's nice
My
to
pleasure.
Hear your voice again.
Good to be back.
I am a teacher at the wonderful Kipwajima Village Academy here in Baltimore, and my daughter goes to school at Federal Hill Prep, and I'd just like to address the voucher issue as a teacher and a parent. I'm totally against them. I think our money needs to go into the public schools that we have. I think we have some wonderful schools here in Baltimore, and I am proud as a teacher and a parent to send my child to public school and teach in public school. And we need to work on the problems that are in the public school system, but we should not be sending money out to private schools and give people. We need to give people choice here in the city. We need to work on our charter schools, work on our regular public schools. There are some wonderful people in the city putting their heart and soul into the public school system, and we should not turn our backs on them.
Thank you, Therese, for your thoughts.
My daughter's a teacher in the public school system, and you made my point. What did you say, Miss? You said that we should give citizens of the city a choice. And with charter schools and vouchers are in that as well. We have to be concerned about the whole population of students. And we're not saying that you just throw the other students to the wind. But you also have to.
But in a time when you know you're going to have to cut back on money for projects all across the board here. The government has to make a decision. Is it vouchers or is it public schools? You cannot be able to. We don't have the money to do both. Got to do one or the other in America. Which one are you going to do?
Well, actually, in a lot of jurisdictions, you would save money because in some situations, it may cost you $6,000 to send your child to a private school, and you may be spending more than that through the public
system. I think that's where the divide is going to be. Yeah, right. Do you invest in public school systems or not? And that's where. Let's go back to the phones. Do we have time for another caller here? 410-319-8888. Catherine, a very quick thought from you. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to pinpoint some contradictions that I heard on with McCain. Him stating that he was interested in doing research in autism, first of all, his VP pick, the grandson, is not autistic. They have Down syndrome. So I thought that was I don't understand why he said autism. And also, if he wants to do autism research, how is he going to do that? And free spending. Also, vouchers. They are a choice, but they aren't a solution to a problem. How do you solve the problem of American education? I do think that No Child Left Behind was a start. It was a start at looking at data-driven instruction. But if I have students who are special needs children, and my children who have disabilities, how are you going to compare me to a teacher whose children are gifted and talented? Or if I have children who have parents who are absent at home and aren't reading with their children, how are you going to compare my children, my performance?
All right, Catherine, I'm sorry. We're just about out of time, and I do appreciate you being here, and I want to thank both Jim Pelora and Quincy Gamble for being here today. We can take a break and hit a very different subject in just a minute. I want you to. Do we have time for reading email? We're out of time. We'll post this email about the tax plan. We didn't get a chance to read it, but we'll next time. Thank you both for being here. We'll take a short break. Come right back with a very different story that we recorded earlier with Zohar Meyerhoff Hieronymus, a book on Kabbalistic teachings. You can hear a bit of that interview when we come back. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Go vote.
Go vote.
Go vote. Kabbalistic Teaching of the Female Prophets, The Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel, is the new book from local author and broadcaster Zohara Meyerhoff Hieronymus. Zoe's new book draws the connections between the seven female prophets, who are Sarah, Miriam, Devorah, Hannah, Avogil, Hilda, and Esther, and the seven lower Sefirot on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, the days of the week, the human body, Jewish rituals and holidays, and the seven Israeli species, olives, grapes, wheat, barley, figs, dates or date honey, and pomegranates. In her book, she argues that an integration of all these elements shows us a way of living and acting in the world in any given situation in a way that's most harmonious to the roots, nature of the Creator in whose image we are made, she writes. I sat down with Zoe to discuss these ideas. We began with a sojourn of spiritual searching she began many years ago.
Like many Jewish people, even at 16, I wouldn't be confirmed. I had to send back all my gifts, say I couldn't make that kind of commitment, though I had this love and intimate relationship with the Creator through nature. I found that I couldn't say, oh yes, I'm going to observe Sabbath and all the holidays, and I proclaim myself to be a Jewish woman. And at 16, I said, I can't do that. And I went and did the 10,000 things, and like many people, studied Buddhism and Amerindianism and Hinduism and Shintoism, and all of them share a lot in common, which is that we are being told that we are spiritual beings in a mortal body, and that it's a very short experience, but that there's a purpose for it, and that's for our own development and refinement. Kabbalah had always interested me.
And Kabbalah is?
Kabbalah means received tradition, and so it was an oral tradition for many, many generations. It's said that Adam was actually the first Kabbalist, and why do they say that? Because Adam was able to name every living thing, and he didn't just give it a name like a title. Names in Hebrew are vessels of particular energy, so when he called a dog, a chien, well, that's French. Kelov, I think. Kelov is dog. It was because that was its actual energy state. So when he gave names to things, he could identify their purpose and essence. So Kabbalah, and going back to its traditional root being thought to be an Adam, says that all of us then are capable of receiving this tradition. And what I discovered after really beginning a very serious examination of it back in 2002 until this date was that so many of the traditions I had studied found their roots in Kabbalah. In 2002, it was during the Sukkot holiday. It's a 7-night ritual, an 8-day ritual. I went in on my first night, and all of a sudden, I had this incredible, I guess what some would call peak experience or a revelation. I was surrounded in the most incredible love, like sweet honey. I can't really describe it. It was just overwhelming. It brought me to tears, but then, boof, right in front of my mind, in my mind's eye, I saw this whole thing, that the Tree of Life is composed of 10 spheres, which they call sephirot, that you mentioned. And when you actually look at this map, it's actually designed like the human body. At the top of the tree are 3 spheres. There's 3 pillars. They're parallel. There's a right, a middle, and a left. And then at the top of the Tree of Life is our head. And then there's a ball to the right and a ball to the left that are equidistant. And that represents the father and the mother, or wisdom and understanding. Then there's another below it, like at our neck level. And that stands for understanding and knowledge. Then we move down the body. There's a right arm, which is called loving kindness or chesed. The left arm, which is considered gevura or strength and discrimination. We move down the body further. We come to the torso, and the center of the Tree of Life is called Teferet, which means splendor, beauty, truth. We come down the tree even further. The right leg is strength and attachment and endurance. It's called Netzach. The left leg is called Hod, which is humility, surrender, royalty. Then you come down the body further. There's another sephirot at the generative organs. It's called Yesod. It means covenant. It's the kingdom. It's our attachment. And then finally, we come down to our feet, which is the bottom of the Tree of Life called Malchut, which means sovereignty, the individual sovereign human who carries out the will of their head. So in short, this description I've just made of these 10 balls on a structure of 3 parallel lines basically says that we as a human each have mastery opportunities over our own kingdom. So that when you hear these amazing sayings in every tradition, you know, you are the king of your kingdom, you are the queen of your empire, teach your children to do good. It's not just your own biological children. Children are your words, your thoughts, your deeds. The description I gave you of the Tree of Life in the human body, these 7 prophetesses fit into it. And you had mentioned the Arizal. Isaac Luria, the great Kabbalist, was one of the first to say that each of these 7 lower sephirot of the Tree of Life represent the 7 species of Israel: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranate, olive oil, and date honey. And then there was another great Kabbalist named Moshe Cordovero, the Ramach. He said, no, you know, the 7 sephirot, those lower ones of chesed and gevura, love and judgment and beauty, those 7 that I described, are related to the 7 prophetesses. And that's what I saw in my revelation in the Sukkah. Without knowing any of these historic correspondences, they say a woman has extra intuition, so I must have been blessed that day. I saw these historic correspondences, and nobody told me. For a year and a half into my studies, none of my teachers told me there were these great sources. I guess they were allowing me to make the discovery.
You just heard an excerpt of my interview with Zohara Meyerhoff Hieronymus about her new book, Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, the 7 Holy Women of Ancient Israel. To hear the rest of this interview, please visit our website at www.steinershow.org. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered this hour by Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.